Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and hermaphrodites, my fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinnie's jokes. And my very special guest here, the one, the only, the somewhat legendary, the borderlining on fabulous, Justin Padilla. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
What's up, Vinny? And thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of your show for a while. I can't actually see you on the screen. Am I supposed to hit something?
You can't see me?
No, if not, I'll just talk into the thing. It's all good. But yeah, I can't see it.
Okay. Well,
if not, it's all good.
We can see you. We can hear you, and it all seems to be fantastic. So we may during the break try and sort that out for you.
But no problem.
For the meantime, for the listeners, please just tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
I'm not really sure how to define that. It's kind of strange. I'm just kind of someone who's very unhappy with reality and almost everyone in it. So what I try to do is go around questioning everybody's belief systems because, as sad as it is, I don't really think the people of this planet are too bright. And someone needs to do something about it, which you are, so that's why I'm a fan of yours, you know?
Yeah, it's... I remember I had a comedian on the show once named Wyeth Chalmers from New Zealand, and I asked him, why do you make jokes, Wyeth? And he says, I don't know. I see a guy with a funny hat there or something, and I make up a little story about him. And I was kind of thinking about what he said a little bit and the sort of the elements at play. And what it dawned on me is that the reason why comedians make jokes is because they don't like the way things are. They don't like reality. And so they have to make things up in order to be able to deal with the fact. Is that about right?
No, you hit it on a nutshell. It's, to be honest with you, it's something I don't really talk about openly too much. I don't really have a problem with it, but yeah, like I kind of am just not a very happy person. So that's what I do is I take my inner rage and angst and anguish at the state of reality we live in. And I kind of just try to put my own spin on it. And at the same time too, try to get people to like see where I'm coming from. So like maybe we can do something about it. To be honest with you, I don't even know if I consider myself, I'm a comedian. I just like write jokes. I'm about to start doing more stand-ups now, but that's really my goal is to kind of go out there and just try to like, I guess, educate people in the same way George Carlin did with his craft. Cause yeah, that guy was just phenomenal and had like a big impact on me.
Yeah. I remember I was talking with the Australian comedian, Steve Hughes, who I think is sort of the progenitor. There was, he's the fourth of four, great philosophical comedians, and I think the first being Lenny Bruce, then mm-hmm. Bill Hicks, who was inspired by Lenny, and then George mm-hmm. Carlin, who was around before Bill Hicks, but he sort of became a little bit more philosophical after Bill, and then he's dead as well. And what we've got left is Steve Hughes, and this sort of comedy. He said to me that Bill Hicks wasn't really a comedian, Vinny. And I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And he says he was actually giving people philosophy. Okay. He was a fan of thought in and of itself. And that thought that he was trying to get out to people was what eventually killed him. Right. Because the angst of doing all of these jokes about the worst things in the world at that time is what I think really destroys people in general in the comedic space, because the fact of the matter is the vast majority of things you see in this world aren't that funny. And the more you know, the more of an effort you have to make in order to be able to see the lighter side.
No, definitely. Like, I actually tell people, like, I'm George Carlin's henchman because he's not here anymore. So I'm kind of, at least, I feel like I'm at least drawing from the same place as him. You know, actually, somebody's texting me about doing some stand-up now. But, yeah, so that's kind of the same idea with, like, Bill Hicks, another one of my heroes. You know, like, I'm more of a George fan, but Bill's absolutely the man, too. So that's kind of the angle I'm going for. I figured I'd be, like, their new, like, protege, I guess, in the 2000s or something like that. But, yeah, basically, you know, not to get into too much depth, I had a really difficult childhood, which is still, you probably see in me. So I didn't have much freedom as a kid. So what I would do is I would kind of get lost in my, like, imagination, you know what I mean, where a lot of people are afraid to go. You know, most people just put on the TV and stuff like that, and that's where they get their, you know, understanding of reality, where I kind of went inward or whatever. Like, I never really was a TV watcher ever. Like, even when I was a kid, I didn't really do much of that. And I think what that did is, I think it strengthened my imagination or something like that. Because, you know, people look at me like King Ghidorah sometimes. Like, I got, like, multiple heads and stuff. And I'm just like, what? You never even considered this? Like, really? So, yeah. And, you know, I think you're spot on, though, with that. It coming from, you know, that kind of, like, inner place or whatever, you know?
It's what we do to keep ourselves alive, yeah. Right? And people in the trenches and in wars and things of that nature, they had the similar thing. It's a coping mechanism, right? I mean,
right.
You could sit there and you could be real stressed out about all of these things that you know, or you could make really terrible jokes that are even worse than the reality that you're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's true, man. It's just, you know, it's, like, unfortunate that's the way the truth needs to get out there, is through, like a hidden, veiled way. You know, I always tell people, because, again, you know, people kind of look at me as, like, a weirdo. A lot of the information that I learned and got really wasn't from book knowledge. I'm, like, a big video game player. And believe it or not, I, like, learned a lot of this stuff from, like, video games that weren't really, like censored by, like, intelligence agencies as, like, a kid. You know, games like Final Fantasy and all that type of stuff, they get into, like, these, like, lost civilizations and how, you know, authority's evil and, like, the church is enslaving you and this and that. And eventually, over time, I started to, like, realize that these creators, these brilliant people, were, like, putting their ideas and their concepts of their, you know, unhappiness with reality into their artwork. And I realized, like, hey, you know, I can do that too. And well, I started. And that's kind of what I'm in the process of doing now. I'm basically, like, working on becoming, like, a real deal, like stand-up. You know, I've been out there on the stage a few times, and I, like, enjoy it. But it's, like, I don't think people realize, like, as someone who tells jokes, you probably know, like, it's not like you just go out and they put you in front of, like, 70 people and you tell jokes. Like, you got to go in the backs of bars with, like, two other comedians that want to see it fail. And, you know, it's just not what people think it is. So that's why I'm not, like, all over, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was thinking about that myself, because I was sort of wanted to get up into stand-up comedy. And then I remember all the stories that these great comedians have told about what it does to your life, what it does to your relationships, having to be on tour, having to be up late, what it does to your health. You know, Steve Hughes had massive liver problems. You know, he goes to his Chinese doctor and he goes to him, oh, Steve, your liver is fine. You know, and it takes a toll, I think, and we have, I think, as guys who try to make people laugh, we feel very alone, because the vast majority of people aren't funny. They don't walk around making jokes and making other people laugh and things of that nature, because they're dealing with their own crap the best way they know how, which is usually to ignore it. And they draw all these lines, right, and they don't cross them. And one of the old sayings about being a comedian is that you recognize where the line is that you should not cross, and you cross it deliberately.
Yep, all day long. I don't go too far over the line. I just like to make people think, you know, and that's kind of the problem, is that, like, it's the same thing with, like, the music industry and stuff. Like, there isn't a lot of, like, thought-provoking, you know, content out there, you know what I mean? And I was always very much drawn to that type of information, you know. I always tell people, like, another one of my big heroes, other than, like, George Carlin, is actually Tupac, because Tupac was the first person I saw again, like, you know, I mentioned, like, my childhood was rough. Like, I didn't have cable TV and computers and stuff. So I wasn't really privy to, like, seeing a lot of media. So I thought all these thoughts that I had myself were just my own thoughts, and I was, like, crazy. And I remember seeing Tupac go on interviews on, like, MTV and just kind of, like, really, like, put these ideas out there completely fearlessly and stuff like that. And, you know, I remember them censoring them. And that was another way I kind of pieced together, like, hey, you know, this guy's just trying to be honest and tell the truth. Like, why is that such a problem? You know what I mean? Like, you know, and that's another way I kind of, you know, got into the conspiracy thing. And like, oh, they're totally lying to us, because he was just so open and overt about it that, like, there's really, that you can't really get rid of the guy, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it reminds me of something my producer was telling me. He says that all artists are damaged people. Okay.
Yes.
This is why art actually work, and I think it's more like this mode that you get into. It's a creative hype sort of mode, and I think what happens is, because reality is that depressing and you have that many facts to back up how depressing it is, there's a part of you that wants everybody to know about it. And then when that part starts to come out, you find very quickly that the vast majority of people don't want to know about it. And, nope. And in fact, they will hate you for saying it. Because as Bill Hicks was saying, you know, I've got a lot invested in this ride. Look at my furrows of worry.
Oh, no, he was great. Yeah, no, you're exactly spot on. You know, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that we get, like, relegated to, like, the corners of the internet like this. And, you know, it's funny you said, too, about, like, you know, like, being heard. That's kind of, like, the whole reason I'm actually doing this. Because, like I mentioned before, I was, like, badly abused throughout, like, my childhood and shit like that. And I remember, like, I was very open about this. Like, I would tell the people in my life. And people would just kind of, like, look at me weird or just be like, well, that's just, like, normal and stuff. You know, to the point, like, even the school got involved. And they didn't really, like, do anything about it, you know. And I just kind of, like, realized, like, after time, like, it's just, like, you know, somebody kind of needs to, you know what it is? It's, like, people would, like, always talk about how, like, wonderful your parents are and this and that. They're so nice and wonderful. But they didn't see what was going on behind closed doors. And the problem is that, like you mentioned before, everybody kind of just wants to, like, you know, just, like, kind of, like, ignore, like, the problems and stuff like that. And it got to the point where I'm like, I'm just not going to ignore this anymore. Like, I'm going to get in people's face about what's been happening to me. And that's kind of what happened. And then like you just said, like, people just don't want to hear it. Like, I would bring it up to people, and you could see they just weren't, like, it would get them uncomfortable. So that's when I started kind of putting it into, like, joke form, because I was at the point in my own head, I'm going to make these people listen to me. Like, at this point, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. So that's kind of what, like, spawned, I think, my, like, I guess, like, my sarcastic sense of humor, you know?
Yeah, it reminds me of one time I came off stage at the Okura Forest Festival. We just did a set with my band, Vinny and the Vendettas, and I made a few jokes while I was up there. And in the green room, as we were coming off, the guitarist of the next band, he says, "Man, you're so funny, Vinny. I wish I could be funny like that." I go, "Really? You want to be born the fifth of five children and have almost no attention and basically have TV raise you and develop your sense of humor as a defense mechanism to be able to survive without the advent of wanting to kill yourself and what have you in order to be able to make jokes, right?" And he's like, "Well, no, not really." And I was like, "Well, you enjoy your life, don't you?" And he's like, "Well, yeah." And I go, "Well, I wouldn't want to deprive somebody of their joy."
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I tell people sometimes, like, as far back as I can remember, I've always hated being alive, you know? Yeah, if I was blown out of existence, the only thing I'd miss is the pizza. You know, this place sucks, you know? And, yeah, so somebody needs to do something about it. And that's why I really appreciate your show, because, like you said, even within, like, the truth community, there aren't really, like, a lot of, like, quote-unquote, like, goofball, like, funny guys. Because, like you said, most people aren't funny. And like you mentioned, because there's, like, a line, like, everybody's trying to, like, kind of, like, fit inside some box. Like, I'm, you know, even, like, more, like, enlightened people. Like, I'm, like, an occultist, or I'm a, you know, a Christian or a hermetic or this or that. Like, I'm just Justin Padini of Earth, and that's all you're going to get from me, and I'm not even sure about that, you know? I kind of just go with wherever my intuition, like, brings me and stuff, but yeah. And when you're trying to fit into a box, it, like, limits your imagination. It's like the idea of, like, let's say if you wanted, like, a Christian comedian to combat someone like George Carlin, where they have to stay in this Christianity box, whereas George Carlin's just going to draw from everywhere. Like, who do you think is going to have, like, a wider set of material, you know what I mean?
Most, I think, comedy, to a large degree, that I've viewed of late, is safe, and that's what makes it dull and unfunny. I think there's many types of laughter. You know, when you that kind of laughter when it's really hilarious, and then there's that. That kind of laughter where it's sort of like really cringy. And then there's that kind of laughter that's highly sexual and almost comes out French. You know, there's different ways that you can manipulate the cortex into releasing those endorphin rushes. And certain people, they have their preference. And I think it was John Ansell, who's a former political advertiser, like award-winning advertiser. This guy really knows how to get concepts across to people. And he was a big fan of an old 70s show called The Goon Show with a guy named Spike Milligan. And he was telling me that this guy, Spike Milligan, was the comedian to which at the time all other comedians deferred. Because he was the best. And they showed me some clips of this. And sure enough, that first laugh that you do there, where it's just out of control, where you almost lose all control of motor functions because it's that funny, that's how good it was. This little thing where he had a Dalek. You know what a Dalek is, you know, from Doctor Who. A little machine comes into the apartment and he's got a British wife and she's making him a cup of tea and stuff like that. And he's like, "Hello, honey, I'm home." And she goes, "Oh, how's Mr. Stevens at work?" "He's not very well." "Oh, no, what happened to him?" "I exterminated him."
I've never seen Doctor Who, but I quote the show is my old neighbor was like obsessed with it. He had like the floor mat with the telephone booth or whatever.
I mean, just the juxtaposition of something freaking ridiculous, right? And that was the essence of it then, and even then it wasn't safe. Okay, because there was a lot of things that nowadays would be considered too racist or too controversial. It's so strange because it seems like back in the day when there wasn't quite so much censorship and things of that nature, there in the digital space, there were other kinds of censorship, social kinds of censorship, where if you start saying the wrong thing and doing the wrong thing, you won't really have any friends. And Spike Milligan actually wound up going into a mental asylum. For his last 10 years of his career, he wasn't asked to write any jokes and what have you. And I'm thinking about this like, what if we have a use-by date? Speaking of which, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. We're live on Republic Broadcasting Network.
I feel frustrated. Yeah, freedom won't make it. No, I feel frustrated.
Ladies and gentlemen to the show that's all about everything going down. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on republicbroadcasting.org. And we won't be broadcasting on Republic for too much longer, 26th of November, so another 20 days. We will be moving network, and we'll be going to Ground Zero Radio. The lovely guys over there have offered me a slot on the network, which I'm very, very appreciative of, as well as I've been so grateful that RBN has given me this slot for most of this year. And the wonderful callers and things of that nature, the incredible audience that they have, and those awesome advertisers. There's just so many great products and things of that nature in between the ad breaks of the show. It makes you feel like this is a really good network, and I'll be sorry to be leaving it. So my very special guest, Justin Pedini, is here, and we're talking about comedy, what it means, and why people do it, and that kind of thing, and the processing of basically early trauma. And my belief is that nobody comes to the truth except through trauma. Okay, in my opinion, that's basically the one surefired route. I haven't met anybody so far who's woken up to how horrible things are without having been affected by it in some manner and causing them to question, because your parents are essentially your when you're a baby, your parent is a god as far as you're concerned. They created you, they keep you alive, they protect you, and all of that kind of stuff. So if your god is a vengeful god, you become a different being entirely, somewhat less angelic. Justin Pedini, my very special guest, welcome back.
Very, very well said. You know, I got to give you props, man. You're a fucking great host, and you're very amusing, too. Anytime I watch your show, when I get time, like, I always kind of have, like a grin on my face throughout the whole thing or whatever. So I got to give you props for that. You definitely, you're good, man. Yeah, I what I try to do is be, like, a dark angel or whatever, because those are always my favorite characters, you know? Like, you know, I always tell people, I'm pure as fuck. Like, I've never stolen anything. I never cheated on...
Oh, by the way, speaking of as pure as if, we are on a network, so we have to keep that stuff down, which is unfortunate for comedy, but go right ahead.
Forgive me, I'm sorry about that. I didn't realize. So, yeah, like that. That's another way I think people can basically, like, find and access the truth throughout their own, like, soul, is by, like, try to be as pure as possible. You know, I feel that, like, the more pure you are with your conscience, the more you become, like, a conduit for, like, the force of good. I know that might sound a little crazy. I know the rapper Nas kind of said something similar to that recently, but I do believe that to be true. And I try to do nothing that goes against my conscience. And that's why I'm always beefing and feuding with religious people on the internet, because I'm not an atheist, but I don't fall into any category, and they are not happy about that. And, you know, I don't know, like I said, I definitely go, like, with, like, what, you know, like, more like Mark Passio is talking about, with, like, that kind of occult stuff, and I think it just makes a lot more sense, personally, you know?
Well, what Mark said is that there's two types of Christians. Esoteric Christians, those who have what he calls, could be termed Christ consciousness, like, this is what Christ did, this is how he thought, and this is how he felt about things, and this is the rules to follow in life. And you don't need a book to tell you that, generally right. speaking. You certainly need some experience and some innate wisdom and a conscience to understand that, which is why psychopaths very rarely fall into this category. And the second is what you call the exoteric Christians, like an exoskeleton of a religiosity, as opposed to the religion being within you. Right. So they've got this book, and they tell you what to believe out of it and stuff like that, but they don't actually follow any of the rules. Right. No. They just tell you that you should be following them and give you the impression that you should be worshipping them because they claim to. Right. That's what I call hypocrites. All right. And I told Mark Passio this, and he says it's very apropos. And this element I like to call the main structure of reality. You know, it's a I got asked one time, so Vinny, give it to us straight, is the earth flat or is it round?
Oh, here we go.
And I said, well, I think it's a holographic fractal that's being projected by collective consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. And they were like, whoa.
But what angle is it? Like, as if it matters, you know? Yeah, they get so bent up about, like, the craziest shit. Like, you know, a good friend of mine, like, I love the guy, but he's, like, the most hardcore Christian I know. And he's always in my inbox trying to sell me to become, like, down with Christianity because he sees, like, I have, you know, a decent following or whatever. And the other day he said to me, I sent him a thing about Muhammad Ali because, like, I posted earlier, like...
Oh, my goodness. We're going to have to come back to that. Just a sec, very short ad break this one. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Remember to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and make a donation today if you can, please, to support the broadcast. We'll be right back after these messages from the Public Broadcasting Network and our wonderful sponsors. Thank you so much, Beckham. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about everybody wanting to be Mexican. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. And on my YouTube channel, Vinny and the Vendettas, my guitarist Mike, who came up with that little ditty there, has just uploaded the demo for Everybody Wants to Be Mexican. So go to Vinny and the Vendettas on YouTube and go and check that puppy out. My very special guest is Justin Padini, and you were just telling me about a conversation you were having with a Christian friend of yours. Please continue.
Yeah, what I like to do is I like to poke and prod religionists because people tell me I look like the devil, so I kind of like play into it a little bit. So anyway, a good friend of mine, like I said, he's always in my inbox, like trying to convert me over to Christianity. And, you know, he was always talking about how they don't judge people. You know, judgment is bad. So then what I did was, I believe that there's a higher power. I just don't think it has like a name and a book and a penis and stuff like that. So basically what I asked him was like, you know, well, I sent him a thing about Muhammad Ali and how Muhammad Ali, you know, he came out as a Muslim or a Muslim or whatever you call it at some point. But then later on was just like, all these religions are praying to the same God. So I sent him this information. And then, you know what he says to me? He goes, I wouldn't take information from a boxer. I mean, what's more judgmental than that? Like, you just judged an entire, like, subsect of people. And not even that. The guy himself is a personal trainer, which, in my opinion, is kind of, like, lower rank than a boxer, you know? It's just, like, almost everything these people say is just on some level, like, hypocritical. And I'm just all about the truth. That's all I'm interested in. I don't care what it is. I just want to know what it is. And I just feel like only people like you, me, and a handful of other people really, like you said, people that have been through, like, pain and really suffered are really interested in knowing what the actual truth of reality is, not what they were told as a kid to prove true, you know?
Yeah, I said that the basic mental illness that affects both activists and politicians comes from the same root cause, which is trauma. However, the expression of that trauma is totally different depending on who it hits. One person will get traumatized and then they'll dedicate their life to preventing that trauma happening to other people. And then another group of people will be traumatized and then they will go out and traumatize other people because they feel that as long as it's happened to them, then it's completely justified just as long as it's not happening to them.
Right. It's terrible. You're totally spot on. Yeah. You know, I wish we knew really what more to do about it, you know? So like, as far as what I'm doing right now, personally in my life is me and a bunch of my buddies from like around the way. I'm basically just, you know, I just healed up. I torn my forearm back in the gym. I just want to bulk up for a few weeks and then I'm going to go out and I'm going to attempt to do kind of like what 50 Cent did to get in the rap game, except I'm just going to do it with the comedy game. And I'm just going to go deep with a lot of these people to the stand-ups around, like, New York City and Queens and stuff, and kind of just try to make a name for myself that way or whatever. Because I don't know if you saw my post the other day, but, like, even just in one of my files, I had, like, 111 pages of jokes. So, like, I have, like, multiple lifetimes worth of material I just need to, like, basically do something about it. And I started, like, a couple of years ago. And like I said, just life gets in the way. And it's just really time-consuming to go to these places. But, you know, now just being the way things are, like, New York, literally, I'm not joking when I tell you this. Like, I live close to a main road. There's probably a tenth of the people on the main road that there was, like, 3 or 4 years ago. So now that I just have more free time, that's what I'm going to actually start doing and gunning and stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully in the future I'll pop off or whatever, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I think what is happening here is that the world's changing. What people are listening to is changing. Where people are looking is changing. What people are doing in their daily lives is changing. And it's not just changing, it's literally being engineered. And so we're stuck in this kind of quagmire where we've grown up with a certain level of programming of the indoctrination in our society. And now there's a whole new level of programming and indoctrination in society that we're not comfortable with, and yet we're still trying to go around, do things that we thought used to work back in the day, but they don't work anymore. I don't know, there's all sorts of technological solutions to these things. I mean, I consider myself a comedian, but I don't do stand-up per se very, very regularly or often, or go to the comedy bars or anything. This is my show, you know, this is my comedy show that people are talking into to talk about satanic ritual abuse. And the way that we will kind of get over this sort of hump is by finding these new ways. And even musicians have got this problem as well now. And I thought about an idea called digitalbusker.com. You go live and people are able to chip money at you while you're playing and busking. Right? And YouTube's super chat mechanism made that such a viable concept. And so of course my YouTube channels got deleted and it got demonetized and deplatformed, so it's like there goes that idea. But still, they've got to be all these ideas that people have to spend their time on in order to will into the physical reality. For example, if you've got 1,100 pages of jokes, have you ever seen those books, you know, 1,001 jokes or something of that nature? What if, and I'm just spitballing here, what if, considering you've got all those pages already written down, all you got to do is curate them, put them into categories. You know, these are lame jokes, these are good jokes, these are intellectual jokes, these are rude jokes, or so on and so forth, and publish them. And online independent publishing, I've just recently been told, is one of the main sources of revenue for a lot of people in the truth movement and intellectual freedom movement, actually, because people are able to buy those books off of Amazon and get those things printed without needing a publisher per se, and be able to live off of passive income for that. Now, that being said, is there a lot of call for comedy books these days? I mean, I remember back in during World War II, World War I, actually, when the wireless, the radio was a new thing, the most popular thing that people were listening to during the time of war was comedy shows, ways to deal with the horror that they were beset by on a daily basis through the news and the media. So once a real war breaks out, we'll be the people that people turn to in order to be able to survive and get through the day. They won't be necessarily trying to stockpile ammunition and AR-15s. They'll be stockpiling jokes.
That's actually pretty funny. You know, I hadn't considered that, but that actually is a really good point. I would even consider doing what you say. I'm not, like, opposed to it. You know what it is with me, though? Is, like, I'm fairly well-known in my area because, yeah, I'm just kind of an outspoken dick or whatever. So I go around to the gyms and stuff, and I just kind of go up to people, and I just start telling them jokes. And everybody's always like, bro, like, you have, like, a presence. Get your ass on stage. Because somebody mentioned the book thing to me before, too, which I probably will do eventually because I do, again, not to be, like, a conceited asshole, but I do think of a lot of jokes. But yeah, I definitely need to get like myself out there on stage. Like I said, I've done well with the times that I've gone. It's just that like it's just like time consuming. Like I said, I've gotten places in Manhattan, sat there for half an hour, like signed up, paid them, and I didn't even like call me, you know. And it's just kind of the industry is discouraging. But at this point, I figured, you know, if I just go with like a squad of people, like that in and of itself will probably like help out. I'm pretty sure that's how the Saturday Night Live guys did it. Like I think they were just like a group of friends or some shit like that. So I'm just gonna like lead the charge or whatever, and you know, you'll probably see a lot more in the very near future. Within like the next month or two, I'm really gonna start putting myself out there and stuff like that. But you know, I appreciate you having me on the show too and everything too, because like I said, you know, I post a lot of material on my internet pages a lot and stuff, and I'm trying to, you know, just get people to see, you know, see the truth, I guess, through my lens or whatever, you know.
Well, I was thinking about this, and the reason why I asked you on the show is because I watch your Facebook feed, and you always come up on it every day, and there's always new jokes, there's always new memes, and they're all reasonably good, right? And that doesn't happen very often. And so I was like, hey, man, other people can benefit from Justin Padini. Find him on Facebook and add him as a friend, follow his account and stuff like that, Justin A. Padini. And you guys will have your life benefited by his levity and whatnot just as much as I have, if not more. Because I think the main thing about being a truther is the loneliness aspect. Because you can't talk to people who are on your level, because there's only 1% of the population that falls into that category. That means 99 out of 100 people you talk to, you're probably not really going to want to talk to them again.
Yeah, that's why I do it in the way that I do, to make it like presentable. See, like that's kind of what I mean. Like I'm not shy at all. I'm a little shy now because I'm a little nervous and I also can't see you. But I just like walk up to strangers, like whether they want to hear the jokes or not, and just start telling them the jokes. You know, I'm still like 240, 250, but I'm a fairly like large and imposing guy. So most people aren't like, no, man, you know, or whatever. Again, I'm a sweetheart. I'm not, you know, pushing my weight on nobody, but it definitely helps and stuff. But again, thank you, like, you know, for the help and stuff. Because like I said, we all need to work together and come together. Like too many people look at reality as like a competition, where if we all need to cooperate. You know what I mean? Like you're a fucking, you're a hilarious dude. Like people tell me I got jokes and stuff. We all just need to work together and band together and just educate these people that really don't want the truth, because they just don't want to face what the truth is, because then they need to rethink reality, you know?
Rethinking reality is not an easy challenge. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what I was going to say, though, is that like something I personally find empowering, where I it's exactly what you say, like most people don't. The way I look at it, though, is kind of like, you know, like after you understand that virtually everything that you've ever heard is a lie, you know, that seems to scare a lot of people. But like, I find that very freeing. Like, oh, shit, like Lost City of Atlantis probably is real, you know, like, wait, this is probably, oh, wow, those pyramids, you know what I mean? Like, to me, I find that extremely like empowering. So I'm not sure what the difference with me is than most people. But, you know, I always thought that was great. Like, oh, wow, this is all a lie. Well, I'm just going to do my thing then, you know.
I think what it is if authority itself and your models of authority have lied to you, betrayed you, hurt you, and damaged you, in a long period of time, your respect for authority as a concept basically falls by the wayside. Somebody says that they're an expert, you're immediately suspicious of them. Somebody says that they're an authority on this subject, you're immediately suspicious of them. So in point of fact, to be told that everything you've ever been taught is a lie not only makes sense, but it perfectly justifies your anti-authoritarian stance that you've had all this year, you know, and all these years, rather. So this is the thing. If authority in and of itself is a fallacy, okay, as in there's really only one type of authority and it's a lie, having that realization that you've now got facts to back up what you think, to back up what you feel, it makes you feel a lot better. It makes you feel a lot more free, because finally, things actually make sense.
Yeah, I think that's why George Carlin, like, had all those lists of, you know, on fire and brimstone, because, like you said, like, people, like, you know, you basically make a list, like you said, of all, like, the points and things that you got on your side, and, you know, that's at least where I got, like, I get, like, the jokes from. It's just, you know, when something doesn't go along with, like, the way I see it, like Bill Hicks talked about, I kind of just, you know, I put my own two cents, and, you know, usually I'm fortunate enough to have my own, I guess, like, punchline about it or whatever, but, yeah, it's, you know, I don't know.
I was thinking about this as the point of a joke is basically that all jokes have one thing in common, one thing in particular, a victim. All right. Somebody is always the butt of the joke. Now, in the Vinnie Eastwood showcase, the jokes are very terrible puns. So the victim is you, the audience. And and if you're a conspiracy minded, there is literally no end to the vast array of victimhood that you can make jokes out of, you know?
I know. It's great. That's the best part. You know, like, that's what I mean. There's just so much material to draw from. Like, again, like, I just stay, you know, coming up with more and more material because there's just so much to draw from. Like, I don't understand how there aren't, like, everyone's not a comedian. Like, you know, I've been having a field day since COVID-19. You know, I don't know if you ever saw my, like, Mount Everest video, but that did really big just because, you know, I pointed out how, like, they shut down Mount Everest. And, you know, like, I mean, think about the logic there. Like who with a respiratory infection wants to climb a mountain, let alone who's on top of the mountain already that's going to contract the COVID? Like, it's just, you know, and, like, people just, you know, like, what? I mean, think it over. Like, what? You know, this is where I come up with stuff, though. It's kind of ridiculous, you know?
It's to ridicule, okay? That's the thing. Things are ridiculous, and thus they need to be ridiculed. All right. And comedy, sort of like the what was it saying there about to be humble requires humiliation. Okay, that's what it comes from. And the vast majority of people who go along with mainstream narratives have not been humiliated enough yet. They haven't been persecuted enough yet for their ridiculously moronic, unthinking, and very, very tightly held belief structures that have been provided for them that they never came up with on their own, that they haven't processed in any way.
It's like football is actually the perfect example of people just being programmed and hypnotized. Football is objectively one of the most boring things you could ever possibly watch. I mean, a football game is literally like if you were like up high in an apartment, let's say in like Manhattan, and like you look down and try to watch a group of cars navigate through traffic. That's basically like watching football. It's not fun. It's not, again, like, almost I'm the only person I know that doesn't like football other than like a few women. But like the idea, like, I remember being like a kid and like, what are the chances that everybody likes this except me? You know, like, it's like, what? All of, like, I can sit and watch like a basketball or UFC or something like that because there's a lot of action. But football is just boring as sin. And it's literally here in the United States, everyone is obsessed with this. And that was like another thing too. I remember thinking like, what is the chance that everybody likes this but me? And then, like I said, you know, over time, like I started to realize like, oh, these people just aren't really being genuine. They're not being their true selves. They're just trying to, like we talked about earlier in the interview, like they're just trying to like fit a mold. They don't want to go past those lines that you mentioned, you know?
It's exhausting, right? And the word you ticked on there is boring, okay? And I think that is the vast majority of people summed up in a nutshell right there. They're freaking boring. Why?
Freaking boring.
Why? Because they're not original, okay? They ain't coming up with anything that ain't already been come up with. They don't have an opinion that hasn't already been given to them. It's, what would you call it? Mediocre. They're mediocre.
Yeah.
All right. What you really want in life is people that inspire you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Inspire as opposed to respire, which is the breath out. Inspire is the breath in. And Cliff High told me this. I told him, hey, humanity is like a spring. If you push us down, we'll resist you. You push us down all the way. we'll still resist you, and the second you stop pushing us down, we'll pop up, right? That's what humanity's spirit's like. And he goes, no, Vinny, use an organic example. Humanity's like a water spring. Now, what happens when you try to push down water that's bursting through to the surface? It starts going sideways, going all the way through stone and through mud and through sand and bursting through to the surface from places you can't predict or comprehend. That's what humanity's spirit is actually like. Now, that's the whole basis of inspiration, okay? To give ideas and that current and that courage to others. And the only way to do that is by example. So if there are no examples of people with intellect, with comedy, with creativity, with inventions, and people with originality, what is going to happen to you, considering that we are all a base construct of all of the experiences that we've been exposed to? Okay? And so that's why it's so important to be original like we are, to be genuine like we are, if nothing else, because there are very few of us.
Yeah. And that's actually, you know, it's good you brought that up, because, you know, the inspiration thing is probably the most important thing, I feel. That's kind of why I think people are boring, is because they're not really inspired. And I just want to point out to anybody like watching this, like, at least where I've gotten a lot of my personal inspiration from is seeing some of these great people of the past, like someone like George Carlin or Tupac, or, you know, like Da Vinci, or, you know, just like the people that really, you know, did stuff or whatever. And, you know, a lot of people just enjoy their material, but they don't like look into what got this person into that mindset? Like what have they been through? Like, what was it that, you know, that they, you know, inspired them or got them to on the method and track of thinking that they're on? And that's why I, like, anytime like I'm fascinated with somebody or something, like, I kind of want to take it all in and learn all about it. And then if you look into these people that really did make the difference, it's like we talked about earlier, a lot of these people were in like a lot of pain and stuff. And if you look in their writings or just some of their interviews and stuff, you know, you can see it. Like, you know, the guys that I mentioned, they weren't like, you know, just all like MTV happy guys, you know, they like had something to say on their interviews. And not only were they significantly more talented than anyone else in their field, their bodies of work were just absolute. I mean, if you look at like George Carlin's body of work, it's insane compared to just like even like some of the greats like Rodney Dangerfield. I think he only had like two stand-ups or something that he just pulled jokes out of, or you know, like Tim Allen, I think he had like one stand-up or something like that. You know, same thing, or like Tupac. I think they're still finding songs. This guy had like 1,000 songs. If you took like Jay-Z, Nas, Eminem, and Biggie and combined the amount of tracks that they did in the 30 years since they've been doing their thing, it still just kind of comes out to about what Tupac did in like 4 years. It you know, it's because these people were driven and inspired from something different than just being rich and famous. They wanted to change the nature of reality, the slavery that we live under, and that will light a fire under you, and you know, and there you go. So
yeah, I mean, Tupac, his dad almost got shot by the Chicago police. He was a member of the Black Panthers, I believe, at the time.
Yeah.
And the cops pulled up outside his cousin's house. He's staying with his cousin there to stay down low. And they pulled out all their guns and told them to come out. And Tupac's dad started taking off his clothes. And his cousin's like, what are you doing? He's like, take off all your clothes, man, all of them. Go out there buck-ass naked. Otherwise, they'll say that you've got a gun and they'll shoot you. And so his cousin was like, nah, man, I'll take off most of my clothes. Just goes out there in boxer shorts. Gun! Blew him away. And then Tupac's dad comes out. Wang swinging in the breeze, and you could see, he said he could see the look on these cops' face. Damn it, you know. Let's say that happened to your dad. How would that affect you in terms of your inspiration to do something to help the Black community? And I remember it was John Potash, who I had on the show a number of years ago, talked about the FBI's secret war on Black leaders. And this is what happens, I think, when you get to the point of being able to inspire people to such a degree that you're actually activating them and you're getting them to stop sitting down, doing nothing, being a voyeuristic observer of this information. You're turning a consumer into a creator. That's what they don't want. That's what makes them target you.
Mm-hmm. I totally believe that. Actually, I didn't know that about Tupac's father, but they actually went after him the moment he put out a song. Tupac never had a record, a record with the law, at least, until he put out his first record, which is ironic, I guess. But yeah, for that exact reason and stuff. Yeah, and the Black Panthers, you know, that's what they'll do, because God forbid, you know, they get equal rights or something like that, you know? I mean, you know what it is. Like, you know, they control all the information and how... you know, everything's seen. And that's one of the things, like I said, that really woke me up, was seeing what they did to him in the early 90s and how they framed him and this and that, where I was just kind of like they charged him with the sexual harassment thing. But the actual charge wasn't that. And then I remember the newspaper said that it was. And I was like, wow, like they really are just trying to frame this dude. And that, you know, when I was like 18, 19, I was like, oh, wow, these people were really, you know, really like that. You know, another sort of on the same topic, another bit of censorship. I post about Godzilla a lot, which people are like, why, you know, why do you like Godzilla so much? And most people don't know this, but the original Godzilla film was banned in the United States for 50 years because of what it was about. And, you know, and that's kind of the thing. I remember when I was like 5 years old, like seeing the first movie and having that explained to me about how they basically like altered and doctored the movie and then released it in the United States like 2 years later. And that was just always kind of in the back of my mind. So I was a lot more likely to, you know, I guess just kind of consider that when I would hear things like, you know.
It was a strange time every time. Right? Wherever society is, at whatever point it is, there's a whole bunch of things that they're just not willing to accept. Whole bunch of things that they're just not willing to look at it in terms of the majority. Over time, those small voices that get stamped out and ignored and abused and so on and so forth, they leave a trail for other people to pick up and keep going on as they were. So, I think that's the end of the show. Justin, thank you so much for your time, brother. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor having you on the show, man. And I can't wait until you get your ass on a stage and get somebody to film it so I can actually watch you doing your first stand-up set, bro. I'm waiting for it.
Okay, great. I think I have one I can send to you or whatever. But yeah, if you ever want to come on my Facebook too or whatever, I'd love to have you on. But again, thank you so much for having me, man. Like I said, I'm a big fan of yours or whatever. So keep doing it. And like I said, I'll keep sharing your stuff. Much love to you. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Go to the vinnyeastwoodshow.com. And we will see you again next time. Thank you so much.